Welcome to Making Lease Radio, the radio with a social conscience, and I'm Don Kosick. Making Lease Radio is pleased to bring you a special program on the Global Health Watch 2. The recently released Global Health Watch 2 is a must-read to make the links on the state of the world's health. We are broadcasting the voices of three prominent global health activists, Maya Kadjus, David Saunders, and Jerry Spiegel, who will be bringing you their perspectives about Global Health Watch 2. Global Health Watch comes out of the largest ever civil society mobilization in health, the First People's Health Assembly, which created the People's Health Charter, which is a call to action on the root causes of ill health and a lack of access to essential health care. The publication of a Global Health Watch took up the challenge for an alternative World Health Report. The second Global Health Watch report, following the similar direction of the first Global Health Watch, critiques both the state of global health and the inadequate global response to poor health and widening disparities. It sets out an explicit political understanding of the current state of health around the world, highlighting poverty as the biggest epidemic the global public health community faces, and underlines the importance of economic policy as a health issue, and the impending and potentially cataclysmic effects of climate change on people's health throughout the world. It addresses other key underlying determinants of health: access to sanitation facilities, water and food, war and conflict, the state of primary education, economic and social development of communities. It emphasizes not just the health needs of the poor and vulnerable people, but also their relationship with the rich and the powerful. Improving the situation of the world's poor cannot be achieved through aid or charity alone. Profoundly unjust and unequal power relationships need to be tackled. This and much more is discussed in Global Health Watch 2. You can obtain more information on Global Health Watch 2 at www.ghwatch.org or www.phmovement.org. Thanks for listening to Making Links Radio at www.makinglinksradio.ca. Don Kosick, Making Links Radio. We're talking to Maya Kadjus about Global Watch 2, which is a book that's just come out that in a lot of ways adds much more on to what the WHO just came out with, right, Maya? So you want to explain it a bit?
Okay, Global Health Watch 2 is the second critique and trying to do a real picture of the world. The quote that I used when I talked about it on Monday morning is that World Health Report describes the world. Global Health Watch 2 begins to suggest how we might change the world. I think one of the really important things about Global Health Watch, too, and I'd like to underline that, it's a health watch, but there is no chapter on illness or disease. Number of Canadians have been involved, 15 of us. There's a whole chapter on development assistance and health. But really, the Global Health Watch takes both all of the international work that has been done formally by the Commission on the Social Determinants of Health, by WHO, by PAHO, and tries to link that into suggestions for critical thinking. It tries to help people think critically, and it's semi-popular literature. So it's really important because it's readable. Maybe not by somebody with grade 8 education, but certainly readable by somebody with high school education. You don't have to be a PhD or have access to Lancet or British Medical Journal to be able to read the Global Health Watch. And I think that's another vital point to be made.
It seems to be coming out at a very critical time. We've got an economic collapse going on in the world. We're seeing, as was pointed out here, that the conditions for many, many people is not getting any better in terms of living conditions. Developing worlds are going to be very vulnerable to this crash. So does it kind of try and give directions about how people can mobilize and organize?
Well, it says we have to mobilize. We have to try to develop ways of holding governments accountable for health. It makes the important link between health and the economy, which often we don't. We talk in very separate little boxes, separate silos. However, it talks about, it was the Global Health Watch 2, of course, was put together by three agencies: People's Health Movement, GEGA, the Global Equity Gauge Alliance, and MedAct in London, three agents, and People's Health Movement is certainly a movement that has slowly grown worldwide. It's a coalition of various kinds of progressive people. It's not an organization. There's no chairperson, but it's a coalition of people that work in their areas to try to stop some of the economic structures that are making people sick.
When you look at this report, does it have relevance for Canadians?
Oh, of course, very much so. I mean, it has relevance for Canadian, both rich middle class and poor Canadians. It tells the rich Canadians, smarten up, pay your taxes, and get out of some of those bad investments. And it suggests to poor Canadians that their poverty is not necessarily their fault, nor is their ill health, and that people need to organize to try to make the whole system more equitable.
Yeah, your underlying theme, and we're here at the International Primary Healthcare Conference, seems to be that health has got to link up, make alliance, collaborate with other social movements for change.
Oh, yeah, and that's I think the People's Health Movement certainly believes in that, and it's one of the main authors of the Global Health Watch, too. And there have to be alliances between all amongst all of the progressive groups, the environmental groups, the housing groups, the welfare groups. I mean, whatever happened to, there used to be National Association of National Association of Poverty Organizations. A lot of those organizations have disappeared. Don't tell me there aren't any poor people. So how do you link, how do you rebuild and re-energize those social movements? And we happen to, the people working on this happen to think that it is primary health care can be a core, but it has to be primary health care with a socio-economic political analysis.
So when you look at the ability for people to access this book, it's also going to be on the Internet. Like, you've figured out a lot of ways of making sure people can get to it, eh?
Well, right now we're selling it for $28 Canadian, but after the 12th of November, it'll be free for download on the Internet. People will be able to burn their own CDs of it. I'm assuming if they want to print it, they will be able to print it. It's rather hard to read on the Internet. Do you want me to read out the address? It is, and you can read more about it there too, is www.ghwatch.org, and as I said, November 12th it'll be available, and then there will also be CDs available. But if people go to that website, they can get that information.
But just coming out of this International Primary Health Conference that you've helped to organize, how do you see this conference relating to the kind of work you're doing that you put together with the Global Health Watch too?
I think the two are inexorably linked. When we thought about the conference, we really thought about it because it is the 30th anniversary of Alma Ata, and one of the reasons that we think people have deformed the Alma Ata Declaration to make it sound like it's just talking about health services. And Alma Ata was really quite a revolutionary statement. It called for, in one sentence, it talks about a new economic order. And I think that the conference, a lot of people talked about what kinds of economic orders we should be looking at, more equity, et cetera, and Global Health Watch, too, talks about exactly the same thing. So in my thinking, they're one and the same.
So it could be a really good tool for people to use as follow-up.
It'll be an excellent tool for people to use as follow-up to talk to. It should be in every health center in Canada. It should be in every university classroom that deals with any of the what we would call the social health issues. It should be in high schools and get kids to talk about one chapter in it. Give it to a group of community activists and take one chapter. Build a book club around it and talk about it. I mean, all kinds of ways.
Thank you, Maya.
Okay, thanks. Hey, Kostick,
Don Kostick, Making Links Radio, the radio with social conscience. We're talking about Global Health Watch, and we're talking to David Saunders. David, why did you put this together? What's the importance of Global Health Watch coming out right now? Global Health Watch number 2.
Well, as you know, we've already had one Global Health Watch, and the essence of the motivation is exactly the same as for Global Health Watch 1, namely to provide, and it's subtitled, an alternative World Health Report. So the World Health Organization puts out an annual report, and we feel that although those reports are very valuable, they're often lacking in some fundamental qualities, namely they don't sufficiently situate the world's health problems within the global political economy. They don't talk about the big threats to health that are coming from a global order that's increasingly unfair, from policies in healthcare that fragment, commercialize, divide the health sector. So here WHO has its overall policies, like primary health care, which its current annual health report focuses on, but they avoid, for political reasons usually, the big questions. So Global Health Watch tries to look at big health issues and the sources of threats to health and health systems globally.
Do you see it as a tool to be used by social movements throughout the world?
Absolutely. It's a very useful resource. It doesn't cover absolutely everything, although we do try to make sure that aspects not covered, for example, in Global Health Watch 1 are now covered in Global Health Watch 2. And so you don't have to, although I'm not discouraging people from, you don't have to read the thing from cover to cover. You can dip into it and look at particular chapters and pull out very useful facts, but also it describes processes and activities that start to challenge some of the current dispensation and start to offer ways forward.
You've spoken in many ways about almost like the politics of primary health care, that it's a political process and that communities have to be organized if they're going to make any advances on conditions that are going to change the health of their livelihood, their family, and their nations. But this seems to be something that the Global Health Watch too can contribute to in terms of arming people with information.
Yes, absolutely. It certainly can and does, because we've had feedback, academics, activists, people who intervene in the policy area with very useful information that they can use to bolster their own arguments and positions. I think where we're not really as successful with Global Health Watch is that it is written at quite an academic level. So it's not really easily accessible, I think, for people who are working at the grassroots, unless they themselves, of course, come from, they've got higher education and so on. So we have done, with the first Global Watch, we did translate, and with the second we'll be doing it as well, this into a much shorter and more easily accessible version. But we do also really need to translate it into more popular formats, and we haven't, I'd say it's a weakness. We haven't managed to do that well so far.
There's discussions at this international primary health care gathering about revitalization of Alma Ata. Does the Global Health Watch, too, do you think it gives some good directions for revitalization of the Alma Ata directions?
Yes, I think so. Yes, it undoubtedly does, because we have, as we had in the first Global Health Watch, we have, for example, a section on health systems, which talks about the fundamental pieces of a strategy to revitalize and strengthen comprehensive health systems, by which we mean health systems that don't only deal with treatment, but they deal with prevention, they deal with promotion, they mobilize other sectors, they're universally accessible, they're equitable, and so on. And then we have a whole section which is called Beyond Healthcare. So that deals with food, the environment, education, and a whole number of other sectoral areas that impact on health.
So in a way, you're people who are working in primary health care, the direction is to how to create alliances, to collaborate, to work with social movements and economic movements for equity and justice.
Yes, yeah, and I mean the very first chapter or section, which is the longest, is, as was the case in the first Global Health Watch, a critical analysis of the current global economic order and economic policies, in particular in how they impact on health and healthcare. But in this one, there's actually the building blocks of an alternative economic paradigm, which are outlined. And at the end of the Global Health Watch, there's a section on mobilization and resistance. And we use some examples of how social and popular mobilization in a number of sectors, including the health sector, have led to improvements in people's health. And we put that forward because we recognize it isn't just about the analysis. I mean, the analytical tools are very helpful. But ultimately, it's about people's struggles to hold their governments and other bodies accountable to their policies and to start to implement them and to show the way in which they can be implemented.
The People's Health Movement, is that sort of a bridge towards how you can link sectors together in a social political movements?
Yeah, well, as you know, Global Health Watch is produced by People's Health Movement and two other organizations. And People's Health Movement has probably been the most active in producing the Global Health Watches. So the People's Health Movement is a very large social network now in many countries, over 70 countries. But the point about it is that it isn't just about health care. So the People's Health Movement has attempted from the outset to link health sector activists, researchers, critical analysts, to people, to their equivalents in other sectors of struggle, environment, women's issues, social services, food and agriculture, and so on, because we recognize, and of course primary health care does, that all of these are very much part, these determinants are very much part of the struggle for health. So, you know, we feel that if we want to build a social movement that's going to change this destructive world order, we have to link up these different sectoral struggles. And PHM is just one movement that's trying to do that.
On Cosmic Making Links Radio, talking to Jerry Spiegel. Jerry, this Global Watch 2, it sounds like it's a pretty critical document as an alternative to some of the information that's coming out about what's happening in terms of healthy communities throughout the world.
Yeah, no, it's actually been a great innovation. The first one was a few years ago, and it was really putting a different perspective. There's been so much increased attention to global health that you can just discuss the facts, and that's startling enough. But what really is important is how those issues are being addressed. And without the Global Health Watch having a more critical, analytical approach, say, well, gee, what are we really contributing to? We had a real gap. So this is really addressing what was a gap in the dynamic of whether we're going to be making progress or not.
From your perspective, what are the big gaps that we have to be dealing with?
Well, a big gap is really to do with things like empowerment of how are we defining the problems? What are we looking at the solutions? And most importantly, who is going to be delivering those solutions with what capacity? And in a lot of ways, when we made these technical issues, like we see far more funding. People used to say, well, you know, we need more money. And clearly money is needed. But we see a huge increase in funding. But unless you get the basics right, and unless you're addressing the key questions, you may be actually compounding a problem. When we look at all the money that goes what in the kind of aid business is called vertical, like when money goes needed to HIV/AIDS or a particular disease in a particular area, unless it's built in links to looking at the existing system capacities and strengths that are needed, it could actually have some short-term negative impacts when in fact that needed money should be producing sustainable solutions, particularly by linking with the capacity that's needed in each country that's affected.
There seems to be a direction with the Global Watch 2 and even some of the discussions that's taking place at this international primary healthcare gathering that civil society should be armed with the information as well. And civil society should be engaging with state structures, institutions to try and move them in a way that actually makes the best use of resources?
I think a key question that comes to is accountability. So I think civil society, in a sense, has two really key roles to play. One is to be active agents in addressing the issues and being directly involved. Two is to ensure there's an accountability for those institutions like the state that have a role to play in making sure the resources are addressed at scale, meaning that they could really have an impact. Often what happens is civil society could do some fantastic work, but in a very small corner. And if we allow ourselves to be satisfied with that, we're kind of getting, we're letting the really responsible agents off the hook, if you will. And worse than that, we're creating a situation where we're condemned to putting up with the problem and only having some nice examples. Wouldn't it be nice if we could do better? So I think it's the two things, assuring the accountability and taking the innovation.
Seemed to be a, Canada is not excluded at all from this global watch and the stuff that in that report and the book that's coming out that should be coming back home.
Yeah, no, I was working with a team that contributed one of the sections that was really examining what Canadian development assistance for health has been, whether we call it aid. Aid is a bit of a loaded word because even how we conceive of aid, who are we aiding when we tie it? Who are we actually partnering with when we try to build a capacity? So if we look at it as a kind of a development assistance, but for a global problem, we clearly haven't done what we could, and that's partly because we haven't delivered on what the commitments have been in the past, and we've actually gone from having a credible voice internationally to really lagging behind lots of other countries. But then when we also look at the style that with which we deliver it, sometimes it's tied, we're kind of shifting our commitments. We made commitments to Africa, we haven't followed through on them. So we've tried to look critically, like in this, to say, hey, let's look close to home and let's look in a global context, because it's a problem that we see internationally, and Global Health Watch 2 also has specific sections that look at Australia and the U.S., but we could be doing a heck of a lot more than we are.
When we look at the Canadian contribution and Canadian situation, there's the development assistance, or what could be called transfer payments that we should be paying internationally. Then it's also what we're doing here at home as well. There's big questions there about the role of civil society in Canada. Big questions about the role of our health institutions. Are they responding or not? So those things come up pretty clearly, eh?
Yeah, and really, I mean, by looking at global health, we're not saying that that's a problem that exists outside our borders. It clearly is a problem that we're struggling. And like all countries, all peoples are struggling with the challenges of health, what it means to sustain that. But one of the things that I think we use in the chapter, maybe not, but we often use it, is that these policies internationally do begin at home. And one of the problems that we could see a clear link is we're not really addressing the people we need to address the services. And the services are only one part of it, because we also have to look at the capacity to deal with the determinants of our health. But if we just look at the personnel, we import personnel from countries that really need those people in South Africa, where I myself am doing some interesting work, other parts of the kind of low middle income country world that has glaring health needs, yet we're importing those people here. So this is something that if we could look after our own house, we wouldn't weaken them, but I think we could go a lot further. And in Global Health Watch 2, we've actually introduced a bit of a contrasting box, if you will, as a section that describes how a small country, Cuba, has been contributing internationally by sending health workers and training health workers elsewhere. And without going into Cuba, it's a very interesting challenge that a small country like that can play such a positive role, and yet Canada and other countries have such rhetoric about development assistance, and yet we're actually contributing to a problem, not a solution.
You know, when you worked on the Global Watch 2, you went through a lot of figures about how much is being invested in health, how much actually, you know, gets to the countries that need it, to the communities. What's your perspective now on this global crash that we're going through? It seems, we just heard today, in fact, that Italy's going to cut its overseas development aid by, it sounded like it was about 50%. So what does this mean then when you put that up against the kind of information and directions coming from Global Watch 2?
Well, I think there's really disturbing issues, but I think, you know, one, anytime there's a change or a challenge, one of the things that gets threatened is on the table commitments that may not be high priorities. One of the things that's interesting to reflect on is when the crisis after the World Trade Center incident in 2001 pushed security high up on the agenda, we could have conceived that as a question that, gee, security worldwide, including health security, is under threat, and we have to look at what we could do to address that. Instead, the agenda shifted away from what our prime minister at the time had made an Africa commitment, and we were hosting a G8 summit. Instead, that agenda got hijacked, so a lot of the commitments that were made shifted. I think one of the problems or one of the concerns here is as priorities start to be readdressed, there is a chance that some of the outstanding commitments will be withdrawn. But we have to look in a global context that we have, both for ethical reasons but also for very practical reasons. If we could together work towards building solutions, we could build more sustainable partnerships internationally, and frankly also develop skills and insights that are going to help us when we kind of apply the same lessons to the problems we have in our own country. So it's under risk, but I think it's all the more reason that civil society, for example, has to kind of maintain a close eye to ensure that people don't slide away from established commitments.
So the book is available. You have kind of a rollout happening with this book, so how do people get it?
Well, you can get it, and perhaps we can provide you with the specific web address to go to for getting, and there will be copies that are available online. The hard copy, which is handy, and probably a CD, a ROM version, will also be available for order, because that's handy. So we'll have that so you could announce it.
Thanks for listening to Making Links Radio at www.makinglinksradio.ca. You can obtain more information on Global Health Watch 2 at www.ghwatch.org. or www.phmovement.org. We are leaving you with this beautiful song, Africa.